Okay, we're going to start on the two dots at the top of Kuf Mem Dalet Amud Aleph. The Gemara now is going to discuss in the Mishnah the incident or the case where the brothers or the older brothers say, "Amru ra'u ma she'niach abba, look what our father left us." Over there, once they've made such a declaration, then all the shevach accrues to their benefit. So Rav Safra, shevach avu azuzei, Rav Safra's father left over some estate, shaklinu, so he went ahead and took the money from the estate, and Avad Behu Iska went ahead and he made some investments with it. Atu Achei, his brothers came along, and says, Tavu Bedina, kamei d'rabba. Went before Rav and they said, listen, you know, he took money from the estate, he invested money of the estate, right? It should belong to all of us together, it should jointly belong to us. Whatever benefits, whatever profits that he made, should belong to the ansar, should go to the estate, and that should not accrue to him individually. Amalahu, Rabba said back to them, Rav Safra, Gavra Rabbahu. Safra is a big guy, a big gun. If you remember that the Gemara back on Peched Amud Aleph, when I talked about Rav Safra, there the Gemara says that Rav Safra was very unique. And the Gemara itself doesn't quote it, but the Rashbam quotes the case over there that Rav Safra was, the famous case was davening, and the individual on Pecher Manav was making offers to him about the merchandise, and he kept raising the price because Rav Safra was not answering him, because he was Emsa Atfilo. And at the end, he said, I'll take the original price that you offered, because at that point I was Gomer Belibi, I was Gomer Dat, that I would sell it for you for that price. So even though you're not bound by the Gemira Talev, nevertheless, we're talking about individuals like Rav Safra as a Gavarabo. So a guy like that, Lo Shovik Girsei V'Tarach Lachrine. He wouldn't give up learning to be involved in investments for other people's benefit. It's one thing if it's for his own benefit, then he might give up some of his learning. He's got to support himself. But for him to give up his learning to support others, right, that for sure he wouldn't do. What does that change? What does that do for us here? Well, that makes it as if there was a declaration. Meaning that if the difference here between what's in the Mishnah, the two cases in the Mishnah, one case is where they make no declaration, then we say the investments are done on behalf of the estate. The other case where they make a declaration, which we discussed yesterday, what the Rashbam says and the Re says, but there where they make such a declaration, that declaration says that I'm only investing for my own benefit, period. So that's what basically the equivalent. Even though Rav Safra never said it, it's ke'ilu amar. It's as if he said, this is only for me, because he wouldn't give up his time for anybody else. Once he's given up his time for everyone else, so he's improved the whole estate, who does the benefit accrue to? This was what we saw yesterday in the machlokas between the Tosfos and the Rashbam. The Rashbam seems to imply, again, it's not explicit in the Rashbam, that he would invest his own property, his chelek, and he'll get the benefit of his chelek. Whereas Tosfos says, no, you see from Rav Safra's case that he gets the benefit of the entire estate. He invested from his chelek, but he gets the benefit of the entire estate. And that's here. You see, Rav Safra got all the benefits here. And again, the point is being that the other parties do not do it, or are unable to do it. Since this party, or this individual, according to Tosfos, is the only one who stands up to do it, and the other parties couldn't have done it, or wouldn't have done it, therefore they can't make a claim that we should get just as much in the profits over here.
Whose money did he invest?
It's from the estate itself, but it has to be probably his... From the Rishbam, it's clear that he's using his own chelek. From Tosfos, it's a little less clear, but I would assume, again, like you're suggesting, that should be from his chelek, or at least, or a large amount of what his chelek would have been worth. Otherwise, right, then he is borrowing money from the other parties over here. Haisha, shishbicha tenechasim, shishbicha deyemtza. So the next Gemara said that a woman who invests the estate, she puts all the value of that estate goes to the middle, goes to the estate as a whole. So now, the Gemara's question, we asked this on the Mishnah, I said the Gemara will discuss today. Isha b'nechsei yatmei ma'avaita. What is the woman's rights here at all? Why does the woman have property here whatsoever? How did she get property? The woman's entitlement in terms of the estate is simply you can have her ketubah, or she's entitled to mizonot. Other than that, what does the wife have anything to do with the nechasim over here? There's no reason that she should be involved in the estate or in the investment of the estate. So Amar Rabbi Yirmiyah, Sbi Isha Yoreshet. It's a case where the woman inherited property. So now, what does it mean that the woman inherited property? We'll see this in a second. We'll see women inherited property. I'll go back through the Rishonim and discuss what they say about the woman inheriting property. Pshita. Of course, if she inherited her property, of course, if she invests the property, it's all going to go to the Emtza. No, Maud came on, Darka Lemitrach. Since women don't normally get involved in the business matters or business affairs, it'll be like the case of Rav Safra, which even though it's not explicit, it's implicit, the fact that she's even engaging in the property here, that she's only doing it for her own benefit, that we do not say that. And we say that if she goes and works with the estate, she's working on the benefit of the for the entirety of the estate, for the whole estate, and not uniquely or for herself personally. Now, what does it mean, Isha Yereshet? How does she come to gain, or how does she get hold of property? So here the Rashbam says the case, explains the case over here, which is Kigon. The case is Kigon. Shenasa Ruvain. Ruvain married Bat Shimon. So he had Ruvain in Shimon are brothers. Ruvain marries his niece. Right? She met Yaakov, who is their father. Yaakov, their father, passes away. Yershu b'nei Ruvain u'bat Shimon ech nichsei Yaakov. And so Yaakov passes away, and Ruvain and Shimon are also passed away, or somewhere in the interim have passed away. So the property from Yaakov is now going to go, you know, through Ruvain to his children, and through Shimon to his children. It turns out that this wife of Ruvain happens to be also first cousins with her children. I mean that she is both the child of Shimon and her children are the children of Ruvain, which makes them first cousins. But they also are, she's their mother, right? The mother and the children. So that turns out that they could be equally, have equal claims in certain properties. For instance, if their grandfather's property now falls to them, the mother has a claim in the property and so do the Yitomim. So they have a shared claim in that estate that is falling to them. So they, be'avi avihem. Oh, another case is Kigon Bat Ben Abanot or Bat Haben Ben Abanim. The other possibility is a daughter amongst other daughters, right? Oh, Bat Haben Ben Abanim. Or a daughter of a son, like this Lipnot Slavchat, right? Ben Abanim amongst other, right, children. Dina, you know, Dina Kidina Achim. Right? She has the same din as the brothers. It's the case that we had in Yeshnochlin where the Benot Slavchat are on the same level as the brothers of Tzlafchad, because they step into the shoes of Tzlafchad and they inherit for him. Oh, Shamar Bala, Titol Ishti Kechad Min Abanim. Or the husband said that my wife will get a portion like one of the children. So all these are cases where you can have a woman who inherits alongside the children. The simplest, of course, and probably the most logical, is where the husband grants her property alongside the Yitomim. Because then it makes the most sense when she says, Ru'u Mashe Natata Li Bali. See what my husband gave me. Because there he literally gave it to her. As opposed to cases where it's falling from her grandfather, I mean, it's from Yaakov coming to B'nai Ruvain and the Bat Shimon. So over there, even though it's a mother-children relationship, they're also both grandchildren of Yaakov. And because of that, they will inherit on equal footing in Yaakov's property. And the other case we gave were cases where it's either a daughter amongst daughters or a granddaughter amongst the other brothers of her, their father, who benot Tzlafchad, exactly like with the other brothers of Tzlafchad, that entitled them to be on equal footing with the brothers. So all those are cases where a woman has equal rights to other parties that are there. So that gives you a sense of what could have been or why it could be Isha Yereshet over here. Now, next case. Imam Ra Ru'u Mashaneach Li Bali Harein Yosef Elchelet Hishbicha La'atzma. So again, if she makes some sort of declaration which separates her from the estate, making it clear that her intent over here is not to benefit the entire estate, but simply to benefit her portion of the estate, then she keeps it for herself. Mar says, Pshita, of course. What would you have thought? So Ma'udu Tema came into Shvicha Lamilta, because it's give her a shame tov, it would be something that would be altruistic of her to take care of the Yitomim. And people would be ma'arich, would give value and treat her in a different manner if she did take care of the Yitomim. So then, Darmi Katircha Kamayatmi Achuli Achla. So maybe she would be mochelet. In order to earn that good name, right, or have her be held in high esteem because of her actions with the Yitomim, maybe she would be willing to be mochelet on her specific accruing of benefit towards the estate, Kamashvan, that we don't say that. If she makes a declaration, that's it. If she makes the declaration, it accrues to her, and that's it. We don't say that, oh, we're going to consider other feelings here. She made a declaration, then we're going to accept that declaration. Now, the Rashbam over here makes the statement that he made on the Mishnah again, which is that it has to be here that the woman did not take mizonot. If the woman takes mizonot, we said before that when it comes to mizonot, if the woman accepts mizonot from the estate, she trades that for Masa Yadeha. Right, that's the Takanat Chachamim, that the woman or the almanah's entitlement to mizonot from the estate comes in exchange for her Masa Yadayim. So if she's already taking mizonot from the estate, that means her Masa Yadayim, her output, belongs to the estate. So if she then goes and does something with the even her portion of the estate, her Masa Yadayim, then improves her property, her part of the estate, that still belongs to the estate now because it's her Masa Yadayim. So the Rashbam says that this all has to precede her accepting or taking mizonot from the estate. And the Rashbam said on the Mishnah, he says it again here. And of course, the Tosvot takes issue with this. And he says, Vein yira la Rashba. He says, V'davke machra k'tubata, o lacha k'tubata bebeitin, in la mizonot. So he suggests over here that the Rashbam says that if she says such, that I'm going to keep my property, then she definitely doesn't have mizonot. That's not what the Rashbam says. The Rashbam says that she cannot have taken mizonot and then say that, because then she's already given up her Masa Yadayim. It's not clear from the Rashbam that later on, after she's done the Hashvich, you know, she's Meshbiach the property and they do some sort of, she gets that benefit, then she asks for mizonot. Seems from the Rashbam that might be okay. But the Tosfot concludes from here, she can't get mizonot. Once she makes this type of deal, she can't get mizonot. And the Rashba says he doesn't understand. That's only when she sells her ketubah. Or she goes to Beis Din and takes her ketubah, then she doesn't get mizonot. Over here, that she didn't take anything from her ketubah, right? But she just took her nichse malug shela, umar she yarsha, whatever she inherited, umar she natan la balak mechad ben abanim, lo yifsid a mizonot. There's no reason that she should learn lose her mizonot over here. There should be no correlation between her personal property that she takes out and her masei yadayim belonging to the estate. And then, but he says, the Rashbam also explained that Beis Din was mitatzel, lashbia mashishbicha le'atzma, to make her take a shvua about what exactly she was mashbiach for herself. Lo yidah Rashba menali, isn't it where the Rashbam came up with this? Tol olam havi b'cheskat yoshim, ad shishbi'ua Beis Din. Right, that it will always be in the possession of the Yoshim until she takes a Shavua. Then la kuach la gavot k'tubatel b'beitin. L'achum mari davka b'shal yireshet. Has to be here. It's a case where the woman is definitely a yiresh. It can't be a case where the Beis Din, she didn't take a Shavua yet to collect her k'tubah. And it's as if her claim on the k'tubah is collected because she says, I'm taking it now because Beis Din is taking too long. So that can't be the case. So one of the cases he eliminates is it can't be a claim of ketubah that we're talking about over here. Second thing he says is that it can't be that she's eliminated from mizonot, because she's taking property that belongs to her, property that she's yoreshet, property that belongs to her. It doesn't preclude her from the mizonot. That doesn't guarantee the masei yadayim. Masei yadayim means what she does for the estate. We know what she's involved in the estate will go to the estate, but what she takes of her own property will remain with her. Although the Rashbam, and you can see why the Rashbam says, no, if the property is from the estate and her masei yadayim belongs to the estate, then the two together would indicate that any benefit that comes from that belongs to the entirety of the estate. All right, now, next case. Amar Mechanina, Amasi Isha Bino Agadol. Someone who takes a wife for his eldest child, buy it in the house, the eldest child gets the house. So the father marries off his oldest son to a woman in one of his houses. House belongs to the son. So it's Kano, Bedavka, Agadol, only the eldest son, number one. That would preclude this idea of building a Beit Chanut because it's unique to the oldest son. Davka Betula. Also, it's only a woman who is a Betula, not an Almanah. Davka Ishto Rishona. Again, it has to be his first wife, not when he's taking his second wife or third wife. Davka Shisio Rishon. And also, he has to marry him off first. I mean, it has to be the oldest child that he's marrying off first, that no other child was married off. Right? So, Gemara says, Pshito. Of course. Yichad Aviv, Bayit, V'aliyah, right? If the father set aside for him to get married in a house and an attic or an upper level, then Bayit Kana, Aliyah Lo Kana. Then he gets the house, enough that he gets the house. Forget about the Aliyah, it's something separate. It has totally separate access, entrance, can be used separately. So there you give him the house, not the Aliyah.
What's Pshita?
The Pshita is that he doesn't get the Aliyah. That when he gave him that, when he did it in the Bayit Aliyah, he only gets the Bayit. Bayit V'achzadra, Mahu. Comes to a house and the porch or portico or the entranceway to the house, what's the din? Shnei batim zelifnei mizeh mahu. Two houses, one captive the other, what's the din there? Teku. So the Rishbam reads that, the next two cases, that imtim salomar. He says, if you say bait v'achsadra is one unit, and he gets the achsadra as well, then shnei batim, where there's really two separate entities, what's the din? Right, so you have a case. That's the way the Rishbam explains it. Tosu takes some issue with the order or the explanation of the Rishbam, and he says that they're all imtim salomar. He says, listen, it's clear that he doesn't take the addict. Aksadra shaykh chatfei, the gabi abayit. The aksadra has more, you know, more belonging to the house. It's an appendage to the house. It makes sense. V'imtim salomar lo kana. If you say that by the aksadra he's not kone, then mishum dein bo tashmish bayit. Because it's not like a bayit, then batim zem lefin mezeh mahu. Then one bayit inside the other house, what is it? Because they share the same usage or same utility. Maybe he gets it. So the way the Rashbam reads it, the Rashbam, and this is why the Tosafot doesn't like it, the Rashbam has a disconnect from the first case. First case says, Bayit v'aliyah, no aliyah. That's for certain. Then the next case says, well, Bayit v'achsadra, and then Bayit v'abayit. So the way the Rashbam's reading it, it's a case by aliyah, you certainly don't get it. Then by Bayit v'achsadra, maybe you do get it. And if you say you do get it, then what's the din by Bayit v'abayit? So it's almost the reverse of the logic of what the first case, which was aliyah, you certainly don't get. So Tosafot reads it the other way around. He says, Bayit v'aliyah, Bayit v'aliyah, you don't get the aliyah. Bayit v'achsadra, maybe you don't get the achsadra also. Why? You don't get the achsadra because it's not the same utility as the house. Ah, if you say you don't get the achsadra with the bayit, then what's the din? Bayit v'abayit? Because there you do have the same utility, maybe you should get it there. So Tosus continues the logic from the first case, which is that if you're more likely not to get it. And therefore, imtim salomar, each imtim salomar is that you don't get it, whereas the Rashbam is disjointed from the first case where he doesn't get the aliyah, and then there are two more cases where it seems to be that you're more likely to get it, and then the Gemara is building in, okay, if you're more likely to get it, what about the next case above that? What you're pointing out, Joel, is what you're going to have to say here, is that the bayit v'aliyah is not part of the imtim salomar at all. That's just stating a fact, and then the Gemara moves on. That's how the Rashbam is going to explain it. And so the Gemara says, teiku. The Gemara doesn't have an answer in this instance. Meitavei, yichedo avi bayit uklei bayit. So the father sets aside for the wedding, they have a house plus utensils in the house. Klei bayit kana, bayit lo kana. He gets the utensils in the house, but he does not get the house. So, Amar Rabbi Yirmiyah, so Rabbi Yirmiyah says, so over here it sounds like he doesn't get the house. He gets the klei bayit, doesn't get the house. And before we said he gets the house. So Amar Rabbi Yirmiyah, kagon she'a utzaro shel aviv munuach sham. Now it's a case where the father still utilizes this house. Nedari Amrai, afilu shof chadiyone, even if he uses it just very simply as a dove coat, isn't that place over there? Even if he has like some sort of glass pot full of fried fish or fish ash, that's enough to make it that he's using it, using the house. So what the point here is that the only time it's true that the father gives up the house to the son is where he's not utilizing this house. It's a extra house in a sense. Because if it's extra house, that's why we say that, but we give an umdin adas that he gives it up to his son in order to use for in for the marriage. It's not. It's an unused house, but not necessarily built because it's not built for. It's not built specifically. Beit Chadut is something that's specifically built. It's usually an extension on the house. It's specifically built for the Chatan. Here it's a separate house. It's nothing to do. It's not an extension on the house, and it was something else originally. It wasn't particularly built for the Beit Chadut.
It doesn't have to have been built that purpose as long as the father's not using it for any other purpose.
Right. Right. It's not. And then obviously it only applies to the oldest son, which also would not make a Beit Chadut because you have other children which you could create a Beit Chadut for. Right, so here it says that if the house is in use, then even for the smallest use, then it doesn't automatically go to the son. Marzutra Anzabe the Bray, he married off his son, and he hung up his shoes over there, or he put something there so that he was utilizing the house. He wanted to make sure that it didn't go automatically. Ravashi Anzabe the Bray, that he married off his son, and he put up a glass full of oil, meaning that he just made sure that he was doing something with it so that they wouldn't automatically take it. So Amar Mazutra, so here we come to the conclusion. These are the three things that the Chachamim made like halachot that have no reason. One of them is this case here, that the eldest son gets the house, meaning that there is no reason for it. Number two, this is what we just saw earlier in Yishno Chlim. Someone who grants all of his property to his wife, he's not really granting it to his wife, but rather he is making her a executor of the estate. Idach, the last one is Damarav, And this is the case that we have in Gitin, which is, so this is the case of Mamad Shloshtam, that Mamad Shloshtam is an effective form of Kinyan. So over there, the Gemara in Gitin says it's Milta Below Taima. Rashi on the air says that it's Kalach Lamoshe Misinai. That's really Milta Below Taima, means that there's no reason whatsoever behind it. It's Kalach Lamoshe Misinai. There's nothing to talk about. Tosos over there, and the Rishabam over here as well, and the Rosh, and Gitin, many other Rishonim say no. Milta Below Taima means that there's no halachic reason why it should be this way, but not that there's not no reason at all. There's a logic behind why we do this. So over here, the Rishabam says, well, the logic behind why he grants this to his son, or why he gives this house to son, is that Anansade, that over here, that the Anansade, that for a father it's gnai, that his child will not have a place to live, and that his the newly married, or the new chatan and kala, will not have a place to marry, and therefore we say that Anansade, that he would be willing to for a chatan, that he's willing to give up his house. And same thing by the case of the apitropos, by the wife, that we're Anansade, that he will not disinherit his children. Why would he want to disinherit his children? So why would he give it to his wife? It's rather, he's giving it to his wife to be mechabed, that the children would be mechabed the wife. So again, it's a case of Anansade. And the third case is Mamad Shloshtam. It has nothing to do with Anansade, but rather it's a case of commerce, to ease commerce. If you can't do Mamad Shloshtam, and every time you have to document to make a kinyan, then you're going to have a difficulty. So in the shuk, and when there's transactions and commercial interests for expediency, then Mamad Shloshtam helps you out. So according to the Rishabam, the first two have the same reason, which is Anansade. And the last one has the Mamad Shloshtam has a different reason, which is a commercial expedience. Tosos over here says, no, that there are actually three different reasons for each one of them. The first, he says that the Ktzat Tam says one makes sense by the brothers, by the oldest son, that he gets the house. Why? Because the father cleared it out. Right, he cleared out the house, and therefore, Samcha Date de Ben. The son, when he sees the house being cleared out, is thinking, that's mine. So he's some sort of, in American law, there's a concept called detrimental reliance, which is that if you, someone, you think someone's going to give you a gift, there they have to explicitly state they're giving you the gift. And then based on that assumption of the gift, you go and do something that would have been logical, and it would have been both that it would have been reasonable for you to assume the gift was coming and reasonable what you did. Then we say that the person's obligated to pay the gift, not from a state of law, but from a state of equity, that he has the detrimental reliance. But something like that, that here the son is somewhat sumich on the fact that the father cleared out the house to have the wedding there and to put him there, that he's giving it to him. So that's Michu Dadat already gives him some sort of, access or kinyan on the house. Then the case by the woman, he says the same as the Rishbam, which is that why would he disinherit his children? And the case of Mamad Shloshtam is, again, the commercial interests, that are involved here, that for expedience of commercial interests. And the last line in the Tosfos, which actually goes back, is like a flashback to the Gemara's over there, V'nir L'Rid, Mamad Shloshtam, Im Chazar Machlo, Enu Machul. That if he goes ahead and he's mechel on the in the Mamad Shloshtam, he goes in mechel, it doesn't work over there. So that's where the Tosfos over there spends a lot of time on Mamad Shloshtam. How does it really work? Does the loan actually transfer? Is there a new shibud over here? Right? What happens when there's a nachri involved? All those types of questions, right, that come up with this. So here he just hints at this idea, at that idea. And if you look here in the Rabbeinu Gershom, the Beginner's Gershom states the opinion of Rashi, which he says, and probably the same thing, which Shuk Ikar Kalach Lamosh Misinai. Again, they're like, Alach Lamosh Misinai, which really means Milta Below Taima, that there's no reasoning behind them. Right, so he says, Velo Yadinan, my Taima, Chano, Velo Shtar, Matano, Velo Kinyan. There's no reason, we know, Velo Yadinan, Taima, Mai. We know no reasons for it. So it's similar to Rashi's Pshat in the Gemara in Gitin. Alright, next Mishnah. Achina Shutfin, Shnafala Chadmehen Umanut, brothers, that were partners, and one of them, the partners mean here that they have a joint estate or that they got from their father, and then one of them is now taken away to work for the king. But in working for the king, there are some benefits, which is that the king presses people into service on like a monthly rotation to be tax collectors. So when you're the tax collector, you get a percentage, you get some sort of stipend or money from the king. So that money that he earns, nafaliemsa, belongs to the estate. Chala v'nitrape, if he got sick and got well again, nitrape mishel atzmo, then he has to pay his medical costs or bills come out of his own pocket, not from the estate. So now the Gemara is going to ask about all these. Tana, hay umanut lo umanut hamelech. When we're talking about umanut here, we're talking about umanut hamelech. That is that he was pressed into service for the king. Right? And therefore, it all goes to the estate. Why? Because the way the service of the king works is that they take one individual from every house. So the fact that their father's house is still considered one entity is why he's being drafted. He's being drafted because of his father's house or his father's estate. So he's being drafted basically on behalf of the entire house. He's drafted on behalf of the entire house, and all his benefit, all his profits will go back into the estate itself. So now, Mar says, "Tanu Rabbanan, echad min achim sheminuo gabai o pumustus." If one of the brothers was appointed to be, again, a gabai over here is probably some sort of tax collector or some sort of government official, or a pumustus. Pumus in general is a legion, right? So pumustus either could be troops or an officer of sorts that he was appointed. So imach madachim leachim. If it's because of the brothers, meaning that if it's because of the estate that he's appointed to this position of either honor or service, because of either his father or because of the estate or because of all the brothers together, therefore all his benefit, all his salary will go to the estate as a whole. Imach matatzmo, it's because of him, then it goes to him, meaning that it's his own benefit and he gets his own salary. So imach madachim leachim, if it's because of the estate, then it goes to the middle, it goes to the estate. Pshita. What else would you have thought? If the whole reason that he's getting this position of power is because of the estate, because of his father, of course it belongs to the estate. Why should it belong to him? So when it says, Latricha decharif tve. No, he's a little sharper than the other brothers. He's smarter, he's more capable. So they picked him out of all the brothers because of his capabilities. So madu tema chorfei garimle. True that they had to pick someone from this family, but they picked him in particular because of his capabilities. In the end, so we say, Kamash Balon, that doesn't matter. Because he had to come from the estate, it's not because of him. True. This is how it made him the most likely candidate within the estate, but he's still working on behalf of the estate, and that money and that benefit will accrue to the estate. So now this is a very interesting case. Tamra Banan. Echad min achim shenatal 200 zuz lomod Torah or lomod umanut. He took out of the estate 200 zuz to go learn, or learning in one of two ways, learning a profession, learning Torah. He's using it to support himself. You want to live with us? You get food. You're not with us? No food. So the Mer says, fine, he took his money out of the estate. He goes to learn somewhere else. He's not with the Ben, but let them send his own note. Let him give him the equivalent money. Whatever it costs them for their food, let them give money to him on the equivalent basis. Why should he go without Mizonot over here? So he says, Mesayli Rav Huna. This helps Rav Huna. Damar Rav Huna. Rav Huna says that Birkat Habayit Biruba. That the house benefits from there being more people there. So Rav Huna says, Leit Lelei Fi Birkat Habayit. Well, if that's the case, let him get based on what he, you know, the additional value or that value that he is getting, the barakets get. Hachanami, the Gemara says, that's what you would get. So now we have to explain, what does it mean, lefi birkat habayit? So birkat habayit beruba, that the Rashbam says, she'ilai yadari mehem, haya bayit mitbarech biglalo. The house would have been blessed because of him. He would have brought additional bracha to the house, and the absence of him causes a deficit to the estate or the house as a whole. So then, why don't they give him vidlit vulei ksat mezonot? They should give him some mezonot. Vifkulo lefi chisron habayit abiglalo, and then they will take away or they subtract for him the diminishment of the benefit to the house because of him. So then, and the Gemara says ein ochadami. That's what you do. That's very difficult. Why? Because birkat habayit is an intangible item. What does it mean that because of him the house benefits and now has a bigger bracha? A bracha is something that's intangible. How do you now take an intangible item? And make it into a quantitative, right, conclusion, and say, okay, he gets mizonot, but we're going to subtract from him the detriment that he caused to the estate. We don't know what the benefit of the detriment to the estate. It's a bracha. What type of benefit detriment? So Tosfos takes up that issue. Tosfos on the top, Tosfos says, Perish Rabbeinu Chananel, ner lechad ner lemeyan. So Rabbeinu Chananel is saying very clearly, it's a practical issue. It's a practical issue. You only have, when it comes to overhead, right? You have one office, you only have one set of overhead. You have two offices, then you have to double your overhead because they can't share the same basic items. They can't share desks, they can't share printers, they can't share computers. So here, same thing in a house, right? When you all live in one house, they can all share one candle. I mean, they can share certain items. You only need one set of dishes because they all live here. But now you live somewhere else, you need a set of dishes. So the Rabbeinu Chananel clearly sees it as a practical issue that there's going to be more costs by having him somewhere else. So that makes sense. Now you can quantify something like that and say, look, all these additional items have to be purchased in order for you to live over there. In that case, we're going to subtract that from your mazonot. No problem. But Yesh Mefarshim, the mazla, the Beitrei Adif, which is basically the Rashbam's pshat, that the mazla of more people is better than the mazla of one. So now, Igmar, he asks, V'chi adina and kamahave, v'kamni parei chabai v'glalo. I mean, alright, great, but how do you quantify such an item? So listen to Rabbeinu Tam. V'omei Rabbeinu Tam, enochanam, you could. Why? Yucholim leida, kamo tziyo b'shana rishona, v'kamo tziyo b'zu. So last year he lived with them, and they'll see what their expenditures were. And this year he doesn't live with them, they'll see what the expenditures. So the difference year to year, that'll be the amount of the bracha that he diminished. Alright, so now you should have asked, what? Exactly. He doesn't even say it like you say that you're at different prices, different years. He even says the mazel could be different in different years. Who says that it's a static item? Mazel is a static item. Right. There's so many variables here that could change. How could you compare year to year and say, okay, here, that's the difference. That's the net difference. That can't be the case. So the Re leaves it like that. Again, the Rabbeinu Chananel strikes me as being the most logical answer just because of the fact that you can quantify it. It's so much easier to quantify. And that's what the Gemara's conclusion seems to be, is that we quantify it and then we take it. We subtract that from his mizanot. Right now, Gemara continues here. Hala chala v'nitrape. Gets sick and then he gets well. V'nitrape v'shmei l'tzmoy. He has to take his medical bills out of his own pocket. Sholach ravin mishmei d'rabi ila. Lo shone elo shechala b'pshia. The only case where he has to pay for his own medical bills is where it was his own fault. I mean, that it was his negligence that caused him to be sick. Aval ba'ones nitrape min emtza. You get sick because of an ones, then he gets the estate will pay for it, because then it becomes like mizonot. That's what Tosfos here discusses over here. That by the way, if it's a chronic illness, then the estate pays for it, because chronic illness is the equivalent of mizonot. Because that's something that's like tipul and mizonot that belong to him, and therefore the estate will pay for it. The question here is now, which is temporary illness. Temporary illness, was it brought upon himself because of his negligence, and therefore he has to pay for it? Or is it simply that it's his mazel, or something that happened, that he got bad luck and he got sick? Then the estate will pay for it. So Umar says, Hechidami Pshia. How could it be? What type of negligence that causes you to get sick? It's called Rabbi Chanina, because that's the position of Mina, Damar Rabbi Chanina, Kol Bidei Shumayim, Chutz Mitzinim Pachim. Right, he says, everything is up to Hashem. When it comes to any sickness, it's up to Hashem. Chutz Mitzinim Pachim. The way the Rishbam reads Sinim Pachim is Sina Bikur. That means cold and frost. I mean that it's all on the cold side. It's on the negative side of the cold side. So that cold, you can't protect. You can protect yourself from the cold. You can wear a jacket. You can wear a sweater. Cold is something that you could protect yourself from. That's not something where it's Bidei Shamayim. That's something that's Bidei Adam that you can determine. Right? On the other hand, Tosfos reads Sinim Pachim and brings an interpretation that's Kor V'Chom. Cold and hot. In both extremes, very cold and very hot, the person can protect themselves from getting sick. In those instances, again, in both those instances, it's within the power of the individual to solve the problem. So now, Amar quotes the pasuk, "Shenemer tzinim pachim b'derech ikei shomer nafsho yachak mehem." That one who protects himself will be able to distance himself from those items, tzinim and pachim. So it sounds like it's in his ability or within his control to stop those things. Tosfos, of course, asks the obvious question, which is, what happened to Bechira Chavshit? What happened to Bechira Chavshit over here? What are you talking about? All of a sudden, right, that Tzinim Pachim is the only thing that you can protect yourself from. Other things you can, it's all Bidei Shemayim, it's all determined already. I mean, where does it come in for people's choice? And if you add on top of that, that... Oh, so that's the case, but the pasuk says, and we learned this Gemara in Bavitzia, Esir Hashem Mimcha Kol Choli, Zutzina. That Hashem will take away all Choli from you. When you act well when it comes to the Torah says that then Hashem will remove Choli. So there is a correlation between your behavior and Choli. And it's here, there, it's even used by Tzina. It's even used by cold. So the way it does his answers is that Hashem will give you the ability to protect yourself. He'll give you a coat. So that you have a coat to wear that will protect you from the Tzina. So that's how he solves the problem. But if you couple this with a kol bidei shemayim chutz miyirat shemayim, then it leaves very little that is not bidei shemayim. Now Tosfos gives the answers for both of them. The answer by the case of a kol bidei shemayim chutz miyirat shemayim, that answer resonates with me. I think that's much easier. But Tosfos says here, kol bidei shemayim is with the character traits, characteristics of an individual. A person is endowed with certain gifts and certain deficits. That's what they're born with. And the question is, what you do with those gifts? So that when you say a kol bidei shamayim, determining whether you are rich or poor, tall or short, all these items that are character traits of the individual, which are determined, predetermined in a sense, those items he has no control over. Right, he has no control over what he's gifted, but he has a control over what he uses them for. And that's miyirat shamayim. Chutz miyirat shamayim. Yirat shamayim says, what do I do? What's my perspective on the gifts that I've gotten, I've been granted, and what do I do with them? That I understand. That I can make sense of. That's the way Tosfos answers it. The second thing Tosfos answers is, akol bidei shamayim, chutz mitzinim and pachim. Here Tosfos explains is that, that means that this case is chol ma'iri b'ma'orot haba'ot ha'adam. These are situations that come to the individual. Situations or challenges that the individual faces. So here, the way Tosfos is explaining this aspect, and this is how it's different than kol bidei shamayim chutz mi'irat shamayim, is that there it's dealing with the individual's personal character traits. A kol bidei shamayim over here means experiences and challenges you will face in life. So you could read it, and the way Tosfos seems to read it, kol bidei shamayim, is that Hashem determines that already, and it's all the outcome. I think you could make it somewhat closer to the other explanation as well, which is that the challenges or the issues that you will face are predetermined. Right? That doesn't necessarily mean that the outcome is predetermined, right? But what you will face is already predetermined. The only thing that's not predetermined is cold and heat, that can be done by you. You can undo and redo that with yourself. But other things already, you're gonna face this or this issue is gonna come up, that's all predetermined. I think it's still difficult. It leaves very little room in which you really have decisions, and that comes to all the Rishonim and Achronim and Achrei Achronim of Dessler, of Soloveitchik, who try to deal with the challenges of, or the balance between predeterminants and Bechira Chavshit. How do we draw some sort of balance, and where do people really do have choice? Where do they do have free will, and where can they exercise that free will? All right, so now the next Mishnah, Achim, She'asu Miktzatan Shushbaniyot B'chaya Av. Certain of the brothers were made into what we call today the best man, right? So the father sent them to marry off friends of his, and they were marrying off these individuals, and they used to bring gifts, and they used to be the best man for this individual. So Chazra Shushbaninut, if they, and the way it worked there, it was a quid pro quo, that if you did this for this individual, they would do it back for you. So now, these individuals who were taken care of by the brothers now come back and return the favor to this brother. But it's after the death of their father. So when they return the favor and they do the gifts, the Mishnah says, Chazra le'emtsa, that goes to the estate. Because the monies for the gift were provided by the father originally. That means it was from the estate. And therefore, when it comes back, when that payment comes back, that also comes back into the estate. She'ashush b'niyot nigvet b'beitin. Because this idea of there being a quid pro quo, which is that if you do it for someone, they do it back for you, you can go to Beis Din and make a claim and get the money back. I mean that it's such a embedded, understood trade-off, that if you do it for him, he'll do it for you, that if you don't do it, then you can go to Beis Din and collect the money. If it's outside the context of Shushbinut, meaning that it's either not in the context of chuppah, or even if it's in the chuppah, but you're not present at the chuppah. So in those two cases, if you send wine and oil, that's just gifts, that's just being nice. Those are gifts that you give to the individual, not expecting anything back in return. Virimini, shalach lo aviv shush binut, kishi choseret lo. The father says one of the brothers to go be the best man, and to be the shushbin in one of these weddings along with the gifts, that it comes back. When the gifts come back, they go to that brother. So that goes against their Mishnah. Mishnah says it goes to the estate. Over here it says it goes to the brother. So how are you going to do that? Nishtach ale aviv, shushbinut. If the father was granted, was sent to the father, meaning from one of his sons was getting married, and shushbinut was sent to him, kishi choseret, choseret min emsa. When the father has to pay it back, that's paid out of the estate. So Amar Rabbi Yasi, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Our mission is also talking about a case where it was from the other side. It wasn't that the father was sent out gifts and now they were getting him in return, but rather that the father had received gifts during his lifetime and now he had to return it after his death. So it says, V'achim shasu miksatan shushbinut ktani. Sounds like they were the ones who did the shushbinut. That's what the mission says. So tnei the miksatan. No, meaning not shasu miksatan, but ashub le miksatan. They received shushbinut. But then does it say v'chachazri shushbinut? It says that the shushbinut was returned. Tani. So Mar says hachikami chazra legavot nigveit meemtza. If he comes back, the other party who originally gave to the father, on behalf to the sons, really, that gave it. Now he wants to get his money back. Chazra means that he came back to claim. He came back to make his claim and say, I want mine back. I need my money back for my shishbinut. Where is it? And the Yotomim have an obligation, or they have a mitzvah to pay off the debts of his father. So Rashi Amar Lo Kashi. No, that's not a good explanation. You're trying to amend the Mishnah to read all these different ways. This is the explanation. Kam b'stam, kam b'mefarish. Depends what he says. Depends how the father does the shishbinut. Kedetani, we have a brisa. Shalach lo aviv shushbinut. If he sends shushbinut, kashi chozer chozer lo. When he comes back, it goes to him. Shalach aviv shushbinut stam. He sends it stam, kashi chozer chozer the emtsa. So if the father is sending the gifts of the best man to the individual, and it's one of the brothers, any of the brothers can go, and it happens to be that this brother does it, or is the one that's chosen to do it, then it comes back to the estate. Because there the father wasn't particular about which brother did it, he was just particular that it was done for this individual. On the other hand, if the father specifies which brother is going to be the shushbin, he says, you're going to go take the shushbinut, then it's clear that he's gifting it to that son, so that when on the return, it will come back to that son in particular. That's the way Rav Ashi, Asi, solves the problem between the brides and the Mishnah. Shmuel Amar Hacha B'Yobam Maskinan. Over here, we're talking about a case of Yibam. Shein Hotel B'Ro'oyim K'Muchzak. Because the Yibam does not take in Ro'oy Shebimuchzak. So, what does that mean? That means here, we have a case where one of the brothers was a shushbin for another party. He was a shushbin for a third party. Then he passed away. He passed away and his wife is still around. And then one of his brothers came and was miyabim his wife. So now this other party, this shushbin on the other side, when he comes to pay back the favor, where does that money go? When he pays back the favor, does it go to the estate? Or when he's paid back the favor, it goes to the yabam. Why? Because the yabam takes over all the yerusha of that brother. So now is he entitled to take it over or not? So we have by the yabam, there's a term of bechor. It says that the term bechor is used by yabam. And since the term bechor is used by the yabam, or the parshuta yibum, therefore we say it has the same thing as a bechor. Just like a bechor does not get what we can muchzak, doesn't get things that will come in the future. Only that which is in the estate currently gets a double portion. So to the yabam, only gets the portion of the brother of that which is there present at the time he gets married. That which comes later, he's not entitled to. So it's over here, where the shushbinut comes into the estate later on, he wouldn't be entitled to that. It would belong to the whole estate because he doesn't get a unique portion in that because it's after he already became the yabam. So Gemara says, "Michlad de idach mishalim." Well, it sounds like that the other party has to pay over here. I mean that the brother who passed away did a shushbinut for someone else, and now he's coming to return the favor. But the brother passed away, and shushbinut is a personal type of gifting. I mean that if you give to this individual, he will return the favor to you in particular. If the individual passes away, there's no obligation on him to provide shushbinut anymore. The shushbinut disappears. It's only an obligation if the person is there, and you'll be present and be able to give the gifts with the and with your personal presence there. So lema truly shushbinim esmachimo. Bring me my shushbin, and I'll be happy. I'll celebrate with him. The fact is, since the brother's not there, he passed away. Doesn't matter if there's a yabam, not a yabam. We'd never give the gift to anyone. He wouldn't even give it to the estate because the shushbin's not around for him to celebrate with him. Milo Tanya, don't we have a brisa? Makom shna gula achzir kiddushim achzirin. In a case where where a woman passes away before nisuin, where she passes away during the erusin, over there, there was a minhag in certain places to return the kesef kiddushin. Makom shna gula achzirin machzirin. Other places had a minhag that they didn't return the kesef kiddushin in such a case. V'amar Yosef, v'amar Amar Ukva, Amar Shmuel, lo shanu elo shem meita hi. All the minhag there is determined by if she passes away. If the woman passes away, then there's a question of minhag, whether the monies were returned or not. Aval meitu, if the husband dies, meaning the husband dies before nisuin, and it's right after yerusin, ein machzirin, the woman doesn't have to return the money. My taima, yechol hishi teyamar, tnu li bali besmachimo. Give me my husband, and I'll go through with the marriage. Why should I return the kesef kiddushin? It's not my fault that he's not around. If he was around, I'd go through with the marriage. So I'm going to keep the money until you show up with my husband. So achanami over here, neima, tnu li shushbini besmachimo. So why shouldn't the same be applicable over here? The idea of the shushbinut has to do with a personal interaction. If the individual who is returning the favor now doesn't have the party who gave him originally there to return the favor to, he shouldn't be required to do the shushbin. He says, bring this individual back and I'll be more than happy to be a shushbin and be misameach with him. But he's not around. If he's not around, then I have no obligation to be a misameach. Zamar of Yosef, hachamai eskinon. What's the case here? Kagon, shesamachimo zainim mimishtevel, ispik the poro at shemait. Case here is that the shushbin did come back and celebrated through Sheva Brachos with him, and then he didn't pay him. The shushbin didn't give him the money that he deserves for his shushbinut, and then he passed away. So the Shushbin was here. He did celebrate with him, but he hadn't paid the money. And before he got the chance to pay the money, he passed away. This individual passed away. So there we say there's an obligation, right, to pay up the money. He has to pay it up because he was there. He was present. He was mesameach with him, and he has to pay the money. So in that case, when he has to pay the money, there'll be a difference between a yabam and a brother. Right? So when it comes to the yabam will not get it. The yabam will have to, it'll be given into the estate as a whole, and that's our Mishnah. In a case where the brother himself is still alive and he's getting paid, that money will accrue to the brother, and that's the Braisa. So that's the way Shmuel reconciles between the Braita being a case of a regular brother receiving it in return, versus our Mishnah who's telling us of a Yabam, who doesn't get Oy Kemuchzak, and therefore the return of the favor of the Shushbin will go to the estate as a whole. Okay, we'll stop over here.